You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, and the Skakuya,
Talitin, Homasquim, Astail. Hello, hello, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and this is Fan Club with.
Woot woot.
Woo! With Isia.
And Daniel.
Daniel, how are you this week?
I'm really good. I went on a nice run this morning. I had like the best smoothie ever. And now I'm here and I get to talk about pop culture with you. So I'm in a great mood. How are you?
I'm good. I'm in a kind of a weird mood right now. But I think it's a good weird mood. I'm like more energetic than usual.
Okay.
Which I think is a good thing, especially for our show.
Yeah. I'm glad the weirdness is good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Speaking of our show, this week we are talking about album rollouts, what they traditionally look like, some groundbreaking album rollouts that changed the game, some just kind of interesting album rollouts, and everything surrounding that. But before we get into that, we are going to do our weekly Disgusting Brothers segment.
Our succession speculation, or our Disgusting Brothers diatribe.
Oh, diatribe.
Yeah, I like that, yeah. Mm. Also, before we get into that, I just want to shout out that it's our 10th show.
Oh, yeah.
Which is super exciting. So thank you for everyone who has been on this ride with us.
Yeah, time has really flew by. Time has flied.
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time with
no,
grammar.
No, that's okay.
Time flies when you're having fun.
It does. That's it the does.
Crux of what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
What did you think about this week's episode?
Generally, I actually loved it. Like, I felt like the first episode was good, but it kind of felt like a warm up to this episode. Like, this episode just I feel like it hit the ground running, and the dialogue was amazing, the plot was moving forward, and the acting was just really great. And I just really, I felt like this episode, I was weirdly on Logan's side.
Same.
Yeah, I feel like we, on one hand, we got to really just see how immature the kids are and not very serious when it comes to business deals. And then we also got to see how I feel like a lot of the time when we see Logan, it's just him being grumpy or mean. And we did get a lot of that. But we also got him actually showing his, a little bit of why he is super powerful and rich, especially with that one scene where he's giving that speech to the ATN newsroom. And I feel like there's a moment at the beginning where you think he's going to wear them out like he does with his kids, but he actually kind of inspires them and rouse them up to do their jobs. And I was like, damn, okay, Logan, go on. What did you think?
I enjoyed it. I think it was a very personal episode. I don't know. The scene where Kendall goes all big brother on him and is like, you did this to him and this to her, to Logan, and calls Logan out for all his BS, growing up as a father. But honestly, so far this season, I've been on Logan's side, or maybe not so much side, but I think he's right.
Yeah.
Most of the time when he's get your own ideas because his kids are annoying and keep on trying to usurp him. Mm-hmm. And also, when he was you guys are not serious people.
I loved that quote. I feel I need to use that. I love you, but you are not serious people. I feel like that's such a good quote to use on people.
And I don't know, something about Shiv's
She seems unrelenting, right?
Yeah, confidence, but she's always kind of wrong, but she's so sure she's right. It's really interesting.
Yeah, she and, seems a little shaken, but sorry, continue.
No, it's fine. Yeah, something about that was interesting, and Roman's a little wimp. He's gonna betray the Sibs, I think.
I weirdly don't fully blame Roman because I feel
he's right though.
He's right.
I feel like his path made sense to just take his do his own silly startup business.
Yeah.
And either completely distance himself from ATN or be his dad's puppet. But there's nothing in Roman's personality that would make sense for him to try and undermine his father.
Yeah.
You know?
I was watching they do these inside the episode videos and podcasts after HBO where Jesse Armstrong, the creator and the actors kinda talk about it. and Jesse Armstrong was talking about like the karaoke scene, mm-hmm. and how much fun it was for like him and the writers to write, because they were like, it's always fun to like get all the same people, like all these people in the same room, sorry. And then they're kind of just like, okay, what would these people be feeling right now? And like, what would they say in this situation? And it's like very simple, but I thought that was kind of like a cool insight, where they're just like, okay, how would like Roman react to this? Or like, what would Logan say under these circumstances? And that gave like a good insight into like how tight the writing is, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I must say I was kind of confused about like the business side of things this episode. I don't know. I was
Me
just
too.
Like, I was like, who's she again? Like the board people. And I'm like, what like are they
Sandy?
Trying to do? Yeah, I was just kind of confused on like what they're actually, like what they were trying to do. Like just try and get Dojo to pay more money to buy ATN, or like.
Yeah, I was a little confused on that side too, but I was kind of like, their expressions and their emoting makes
bad.
Me think this is bad.
Yeah.
This part is good. But what did we think about Willa and Connor's situation? Because I feel like there was so much going on in this episode, and that was just like one piece of it.
Yeah, poor Connor. No one cares about him.
I was also on Connor's side that episode too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was very off-putting and like an unpleasant person.
Yeah.
But also like, I just feel kind of bad about him. Because even, you know, we forget about him. Everyone forgets about him. You're like, oh, yeah, he exists.
Because everyone says the three Roy children. And you just forget about Connor's number four.
Yeah.
Technically number one.
Yeah. True.
Oh, I was going to say, what did you think about his little, like, monologue at the end where he's like, you know what the problem, when he's talking to the three Roy kids, and he's like, you know what the problem with you three is that you guys need love and you crave it, and I don't. I, like, exist in a rock, and I, like, make plants out of blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to go home, and, like, Willa is going to be there, and that's how I won. And then he goes home, and, like, Willa's there.
But, like, he does, though. Why is he paying this woman to marry him? Like, why does he need a Willa if he isn't craving some, even if it's, like, shallow and not real?
Yeah.
He's, like, craving some sort of, like, relationship. And the only way he can get it is to, like, pay her to be his wife.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like other than Logan, like, what this episode emphasizes is that none of them act very like logically or rationally. Like everything they do is kind of based off of emotion.
Yeah. So. Poor Willa, though. She just wanted a normal wedding.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like she's accepted her life with Connor. She's like, I guess it helps my playwright career.
Yeah.
But this whole election is just like,
it's terrible.
A waste of time. I thought they were going to, like, go in the direction where Connor would, like, do well and, like, maybe win. But I like that they were like, he's an idiot.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
Holding on to that 1%.
Yeah.
Do you have any predictions for next week? Because next week is the wedding episode, I believe.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a moment where they realize that Roman's been talking to Logan, and they're going to get so mad at Roman. And Roman's probably going to call him out and be like, you guys have daddy issues and you're annoying.
Yeah.
I hate you. And he'll be right. And then Shiv will be overconfident. I don't know. These are all just
Yeah. I mean, you're probably right. I feel like Succession is like a very predictable show.
It's just a cycle. Yeah.
When you look at it from like a bird's eye view, but it still manages to be so engaging. And I feel like, honestly, last episode, I was kind of like, okay, I see why this show is ending. Because I feel like if they, like, it's great right now, but I feel like if they kept it going, it would start to be like diminishing returns.
It should end.
Yeah.
I feel like Logan, he's a bit like, a bit erratic, a little bit. I don't know. I feel like he's like more like emotive than usual. I don't know if he's just like going loopy because no one in his family talks to him, or because he's like old.
Yeah, he's getting a little like existential. I feel like maybe the end is near for him.
Yeah, like
life wise.
His wife, like, he doesn't even hang out with his wife.
No, nope.
Because he cheats on her with that awful lady,
Carrie.
Carrie, that was so funny.
The scene.
Yeah.
What do you think of the Greg and Carrie scene where he tells Carrie that, you know, she's not super good at being a news anchor?
I like how she didn't take any of it, because she's like, you're an idiot, Greg. But also, why does she, like, that's what she's doing all this for, to be in host on ATN. I don't know. I'm like
start a business, girl.
Like, yeah, like shoot higher. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying that's like an amazing job, but like it's
in the
just,
context of that.
In
family.
The context of the show, it's like you have to spend time with Logan and do all the stuff and like so much drama. Like you probably could become a TV host in a normal way.
Yeah.
You know, like try and take over the company or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Dream bigger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any more thoughts on Succession?
Not really. I'm just really excited. And yeah, this episode helped me understand why it was ending. So I'm really excited to see how they wrap it up. What about you?
I agree.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe we'll play our first song of the week then. Do you want to introduce it?
Yeah. So this song is by NewJeans and it's called Zero. And I was really excited that they had a new song. And then I realized, oh, this is a Coca-Cola ad, which is pretty funny to me. That is just fully an advertisement for Coca-Cola Zero. But I think the production on the song is really good. And it's one of like the best NewJeans songs, I think, that they've put out in a while.
If it's good, it's good.
And I don't know. I listened to it like 10 times this morning. And it's silly. But it's I like it.
Okay. I've never heard it. So excited to hear it.
It's a K-pop song. Yeah.
Okay. This is Zero by NewJeans. Hope everyone enjoys.
Coca-Cola 마시다 Coca-Cola 마시다 See you looking catchy, here's a cola See you looking catchy, here's a cola Coca-Cola 마시다 Coca-Cola 마시다 See you looking catchy, here's a cola See you looking catchy, here's a cola 사실 궁금했어 저기 산다 Sweet and monkey dead up, put on gun and dead up. Cause you know it's looking like a shooting star. Can see it's going far. I'm man, it's some coming down. We will pop up all around the world. My pop got some girl. I'm ready, let's go. You already know. Coca-Cola 마시다 Coca-Cola 마시다 See you looking catch it, here's your cola See you looking catch it, here's your cola Coca-Cola 마시다 Coca-Cola 마시다 See you looking catch it, here's your cola See you looking catch it, here's your cola
헬로. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is Fan Club with Aisia and Daniel.
Yo.
And you just heard Zero by NewJeans. And although it is technically a Coca-Cola ad, it is also a really good song.
It was so good.
Thank you.
Yeah,
it was really Daniel's liked it. First time hearing that song.
I liked it. Like, I'm going to be listening to that. I just love that. I love,
the beat.
Yeah, I love the beat. I loved the melodies. It was good. And Coca-Cola is good, so they were correct.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Usually, me trying to indoctrinate the people around me to like NewJeans doesn't end well. Actually, it kind of has ended well, but that's with people who already like K-pop. But I have converted a non-K-pop fan to like a NewJeans song. So.
Consider my soul saved. I've converted.
NewJeans is breaking barriers like no other artist has done before, which is amazing. Did we want to start talking about the topic of the week.
Yes, I'm really excited to talk about this topic, which is the art of the album rollout. I feel like my dream job would be just to be a person who like plans album rollouts for artists. Like that would be so fun. But yeah,
it's like marketing. That's like basically what you're studying. Yeah, could do that.
I could. Yeah, maybe I should. Yeah. You know what? Thank you for making that clear for me. But yeah, I guess that is my dream job. But yeah, we're going to be talking about the art of the album rollout. And Icia and I thought this was interesting just because I feel like with all the music we listen to, and especially more and more, I feel like the rollout is almost half or at least a significant chunk of like what makes the process leading up to and following the album enjoyable, whether it's like visuals, whether it's promo like billboards or interviews or whatever. And we thought we would kick it off with who we think one of the most influential artists is when it comes to album rollouts, at least in recent years, which is Beyoncé. Mm-hmm. And starting with her self-titled, just to give a little bit of like background around this. So she dropped her self-titled album Beyoncé like December 2013, and this was coming off of like her album 4, which like relative to other Beyoncé albums had been a little bit of a commercial disappointment. It was like the first album of hers that didn't have like a number one hit on the Billboard or something like that.
How dare she?
Flop. No. And
it was a joke.
It was a joke. Beyoncé, we love you. Give us free Renaissance tickets, please. But yeah, it was a relative commercial disappointment. And a lot of why she thought this was like due to the album leaking like a week before it was supposed to come out. So it sold like 300 and something thousand, which is like crazy numbers today. But like back then, it was a bit of a disappointment. And so for Beyoncé's self-titled album, she had like fired her manager at the time, which was her dad.
Oh.
And she wanted to go in like a different like sonic direction. And there was no like announcement or promotion of this album until it actually dropped. And I think she was also like on tour at the time, or like in between like legs of a tour. And so anyway, she like dropped this album on like a random Friday night in December on iTunes. And it was like a digital exclusive, or a digital drop, as she refers to it, in, like some of her songs.
Yeah.
And people just went like insane. Like, I feel like it was the start of like digital album rollouts being kind of like the norm, or being like more focused on. And essentially all the promo was almost done for her, because like fans were going crazy on Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter was wild that day. I remember.
You remember where you were on December whatever, 2013?
I mean, I probably was at school or something boring. But I do remember everyone freaking out and being like, this is unprecedented.
Yeah.
She did no promo. She doesn't need to, because she's Beyoncé.
She's Beyoncé. Yeah. And people were like raving about the album. There was a bunch of like news articles and stuff too. So they kind of did the promo for her. And then she also released like a music video for every single song.
Yeah. Does that record have like 7-Eleven on it?
I think on the deluxe or like the platinum edition.
Drunk in Love. Because it was really like, it was a really big change for her. And that's when she started like delving into like
her
rapping
sexuality
a bit more. And it was more like raunchy, I guess.
Yeah.
And like delving into her sexuality. And like, I don't know. It was cool. Drunk in Love?
So good.
Such a good song.
So good.
Did I hear that song? I'm like, oh my God, this song
we
is
can,
so good.
Can we play a little bit of it? Like just like 30 seconds?
Yeah, this is our 10% hit allowance for the month.
Yeah, it's just such a good song. I'll just play like a little small piece just so people understand.
I've been drinking. I get filthy when that liquor get it to me. I've been thinking. Why can't I keep my fingers off it, baby? I want you, na-na. Why can't I keep my fingers off it, baby? I want you, na-na. Cigars on ice. Feeling like an animal with these cameras all in my grill. Flashing lights,
You got me pity, 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 baby, I want you. Nah, nah. Can't keep your eyes off my pity, daddy, I want you. Nah, nah. Drunk in love, I want you. We woke up in the kitchen saying, how the hell did this shit happen? Oh, baby.
That was really important to play.
Yeah, we had to.
We also thankfully turned off the mics because we were fully singing along to that. But it's so good.
I think we sounded pretty good.
I think we did too.
We didn't miss a note.
Should we start a band, a little duo?
A Beyonce cover band.
Yeah,
that
a Beyonce
awful.
Cover band. Our own boy genius, but we just do Beyonce covers.
I'm sure people would love to hear me and you cover her songs.
I think they would. Hideout 3 with CITR, just us singing Drunk in Love, Crazy in Love. I don't remember the other In Love songs that she has, but...
Yeah, neither do I.
Anyway, Drunk in Love, great song. And one, like, thing about this album that was really interesting was a lot of her promo, in terms of, like, the visuals, like I mentioned, and then also, like, performances came after the album dropped. So, like, she started performing some of these songs when she, like, got back on tour. They performed it at, like, the Grammys that year, which is, like, still burned into my mind. It was just, like, her and Jay-Z, like, being super, like, hot on stage, essentially. Yeah. And it really marked, like, a turning point, at least in my opinion, in, like, how powerful social media was when it came to, like, album promotion. I feel like traditional album promo is, like, you drop a single, you do, like, a magazine cover or whatever.
Yeah, music video.
Yeah.
Maybe for the single, and then maybe another single, and then it just comes out.
It just comes out, yeah.
Nice, and which I don't mind, but.
Yeah, we love a traditional rollout, too. And I saw that Harvard Business Review did, like, a case study on, like, the whole, like, rollout of the album. I don't really know a lot from it, but I thought that was just insane. And the surprise drop ended up, like, I think roughly doubling, like, how much her last album, 4, made. So
that's
it was, like,
wild.
Over 600K sales, like, the first week. And it was, like, exclusive to iTunes, which wasn't really, like, heard of at the time. And as you could probably guess by now, she really kind of popularized the idea of a surprise album. So other artists have done it to, like, varying degrees of success. But in terms of big artists that did that following, we know, like, Taylor Swift kind of dropped Folklore as a surprise album. And
true.
Evermore, Drake with If You're Reading This, It's Too Late. D'Angelo, like, Kid Cudi's following albums. And it also, in my view, like, popularized visuals being, like, a huge part of an album. And that kind of brings me into what I was thinking about Lemonade as well. And what do you think about Lemonade? I see it
as an album or
as an album.
I mean, I really like, I think that's, like, my one of my favorite Beyonce albums. I can't say that I've, like, listened to all her albums in full. I'm just, like, a Beyonce fan, like everyone is a Beyonce fan,
yeah,
as you should be. But I'm not, like, super into it all.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's also just, like, because she's so drama free and, like, kind of out of the press a lot. So it was wild how, like, personal that album was, because it was, like, related to Jay-Z allegedly cheating on her. And, like, I don't know. It was just very personal. And I feel like, and it had, like, a kind of, like, the whole visual album kind of, like, tied together into one big story, because even though the self-titled also had music videos for each song, I feel like it was more just, like, individual music videos, whereas Lemonade was, like, a tale, and she was getting more political with, like,
Formation
coming out, like, everyone was like, this is crazy,
which I also I also thought that was, like Lemonade was a great album rollout, because she surprise dropped Formation, like, the day before the Super Bowl of that year.
Yeah, true.
And then she performed it, like, the next day at the Super Bowl. And, yeah, like, the video and her performance was, like, pretty political. And, like, in her performance, she was, like, dressed up as, like, or like she was kind of like paying tribute to MJ, but like all her background dancers were dressed up as like Black Panthers.
Yeah.
And so like people went crazy about that. And by people, I mean like conservatives.
Was that her? Was that her Super Bowl performance, or was that when she was a guest with Coldplay?
She was a guest with Coldplay.
Yeah, she overtook that whole thing.
Yeah, but her and Bruno Mars with like the dance off.
Yeah. Yeah, that was that performance. Yeah.
Yeah.
That she did Formation.
And then she, I think that day she also like announced the world tour, and then we still didn't even know anything about an album until later on. And then she like dropped the album in conjunction with like the HBO like movie that she was dropping, that like you said was kind of like a visual album for like every song, and it was like exclusive to Tidal or whatever when that was still a big thing. But yeah, I feel like her self-titled, and then especially Lemonade, kind of like popularized like artists just putting more care into their visuals, and like the whole concept of the like visual album being a thing.
Yeah, I feel like it runs in the family, because I feel like Solange and like Seat at the Table also is like wild visuals, and like the rollout for her second album. What is her second album?
When I Get Home.
Yeah, When I Get Home was really interesting. She like did, she like put out a number, a phone number for like a really popular producer, I think, for people to call. And she like referenced this like old like Black dating site from like the early 2000s. And it was all these like things kind of tied to nostalgia that she used to promote the album before it came out. And then the album itself is like kind of about like a homecoming.
Yeah.
And I feel like she's also like extremely visual, and like all her music videos are like crazy pieces of art, and she also puts so much time and effort into her like stage setups too.
Yeah, like did you see the Jimmy Fallon performance? That was crazy. That was so good.
Like she doesn't perform often, but when she does, it's like
transcendent.
It's beautiful.
Can we play a little bit
of a Solange song? Yeah, yeah. Sure. What song?
I'm thinking Bins, maybe. If okay, you know that one. Okay. Here's a little bit of Bins by Solange. Just, we're randomly playing songs today.
Show added. MRG Live presents Haley Hendricks at the Biltmore Cabaret on April 19th. Haley Hendricks is a rising star in the indie folk scene. Her unique voice and intricate guitar playing will leave you spellbound. Don't miss the chance to see Haley Hendricks perform live at the Biltmore Cabaret. Tickets available at admitone.com. Do you want to change the state of the world? But instead you keep buying material goods to satisfy whatever desire you have in that very moment? Me too. But now you can do both! Rock Shop and Community Thrift is a local vintage shop that fulfills your 1970s alt-chic fantasy while also supporting at-risk people through their compassionate and supportive work training program. All of their profits go to the PHS Community Services Society to support ongoing health care, harm reduction, and health promotion projects in Vancouver and Victoria. So stop by their two locations, Community Unisex on West Hastings or Community Frock Shop on Corral Street. And if you know any other local businesses that deserve recognition for their generous business practices or their contributions to the community, please DM us on Instagram at CITR and Discorder, because we would love to spotlight them. Because hey, if you can't stop buying, you might as well start supporting.
Hello, hello. You're listening to Fan Club with Isia and Daniel. And this is CITR 101.9 FM. I did that opposite. Oops. but we've been talking about album rollouts. And before the break, you heard Bins by Solange off of her latest record,
When I Get Home.
When I Get Home. And yeah, we're just talking about Beyonce and Solange and the Knowles sisters being rollout and conceptual queens.
Conceptual queens.
Yeah.
And speaking of their queendom, one thing that surprised me was like the rollout for Renaissance, because I feel like it was very traditional. Like traditional compared to her other ones. And so I don't fully know what to make of that. Maybe it's just because, like, you know, the how promotion works is kind of changing. Like the way they count sales is changing, and like social media is like bigger than ever, and like streams are very important. So she kind of released Break My Soul as like a lead single, and even like leading up to that, there was all this like speculation on social media of if there was an album coming, because I feel like some like Beehive nerds or whatever saw on her website that there was like
Beehive nerds.
I don't know. I just remember seeing like there were a bunch of clues on the website. And there were, like, all these messages that were essentially trolling fans, because I think it said, like, B7, so, like, Beyonce's seventh album or whatever.
Oh.
And, like, the message would change to be, like, what's a B7? Or, like, what is B7? Like, kind of thing. But anyway, she released, like, a traditional single. I think she had, like a cover story in, like, Vogue or something along those lines. And then eventually she released the album, which is great. Probably like the Beyonce album I've listened to the most ever, because I feel like I also don't listen to Beyonce like a ton.
Mm-hmm.
But that one I feel like was on repeat.
America Has a Problem. That song has
so good.
Legitimate drugs in it. Like, I think it was one of my top listened songs last year. And because of that, Renaissance became one of my top albums of the year. But it was literally just me listening to that song like three times a day for like months, because it's literally so addictive.
It's so good. We like, I feel like I had this conversation with you like 50 times, but we had like a whole lecture in my popular music class about like America Has a Problem and Renaissance in general. Like, great album. I think her best album in my opinion. But then like after Renaissance, people were kind of like, okay, Beyonce, where are the visuals? Because she didn't drop any music videos.
Yeah.
And she kind of teased like music videos dropping, but then they just never came.
She's taking a break. I mean, good for her, because she made, you know, she made the self-titled visuals and Lemonade, and then like that like Pan-African album, I don't know what it's called.
Black is King.
Yeah, Black is King.
Yeah.
Pan-African album.
Yeah.
That's what I always refer to it as.
That's how it should be referred.
Sorry.
Yeah, me neither.
That one, and yeah, I don't know. She's just done a lot. And that one, like Black is King had like, she traveled for that. Like,
yeah.
It was like, that was a crazy production. So I feel like, you know, let the lady rest. Let her just put out a regular album.
I mean,
you know,
I get
she's
that.
She's touring. She's doing a world tour.
It's just that it seems like the visuals were done, because she kept, like, dropping little clips of it.
But then
didn't release it. So it's like, we get it if you want to rest, but it seems like you're just sitting on these. And where are they?
True.
But I mean, the album is still doing great. Like, I know Cuff It like broke the top 10 at some point, and like Break My Soul went number one for like a few weeks. So still really successful. But yeah, definitely a little bit, if anything, like an example of how she's been switching it up rollout wise every album. And maybe that's a good transition point into another artist that we think kind of had a very unique and interesting and special album rollout, which is Frank Ocean with like Endless and Blonde. And what do you know about that one, Isia?
I mean, I just remember Endless dropping randomly, and it was only on like, was it Apple Music? Yeah, it was only on Apple Music.
And like only a video.
As a video. And, but I can't remember if Blonde came first or Endless. Endless came first, right?
Yeah, so like the...
To fulfill his record thing? Was that?
Yes.
Yeah, it was all like to fulfill his record deal.
Yeah, so the way the fable or the parable or the age-old tale goes is he had like one album left in his Def Jam contract. So he released Endless as like only a video and only on Apple Music just to like fulfill like the terms of his deal. And then he released Blonde like independently. And I think it was like briefly an Apple Music exclusive and eventually everywhere. Mm-hmm. And he made like, I think like about $2 million, like just
him.
$2 million? From like doing that.
That's awesome.
And it like hit number one. And it was, so that was like a crazy rollout in terms of like some label finessery.
Yeah. And it had been like, like 5 years since he had put out Channel Orange, or was it, how long was it?
I think you're right. Cause I think Channel Orange came out, I want to say 2012. Yes. 2012. And Blonde was 2016. So like
okay,
4 years.
4 years. Yeah. I feel like I love that. I'm a big fan of letting artists just take their sweet time. And like just dropping music when they want to. I feel like we're all too impatient and like expect a record every year, which is insane.
Yeah.
That's like an insane ask. I don't know. When you factor in like touring and like everything else you have to do if you're like a working musician. So I love that Frank just takes like, his sweet time.
Do you think an album is coming from him? Because he's performing at Coachella in
maybe
like less than 2 weeks. And they confirmed that his performance will be live streamed. So maybe that can be a little fan club episode.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, if you're good, people will wait. And they obviously did. And then 2 million people bought his album.
Yeah.
Which is, or no, he made $2
million. 2 million in sales, yeah. He did hit number one, though.
Yeah, which is like, yeah, an independent record. Even though he's Frank Ocean, it's still like...
Still crazy.
Yeah.
I feel like on the other side of the spectrum in terms of like album wait times, one artist who's kind of been dependable on like dropping an album every 1 or 2 years is like Tyler, the Creator.
Mm-hmm.
I think since like his Goblin album, if I'm not mistaken, he's dropped an album literally like every 2 years. Mm-hmm. I don't really think that's going to be the case this year, to be honest, but he still like dropped like a deluxe album like last week. But yeah, he's had very like, one thing I've liked about his rollouts is that apart from like always giving us an album like every couple years, I feel like his album rollouts have always been very like quick and efficient. Like I remember for Igor, I think maybe like the week before it dropped, he just like dropped a little snippet of it, like not even the song, and just like announced it. And he's like, it's coming Friday. And it like came on Friday. And then same with Call Me If You Get Lost. I think he went a little bit more the traditional route, but it was still like, here's a single, here's the pre-order, here's the album, here's some billboards, here's a bunch of music videos. And that was all within like 2 weeks or less. So I love that when he just like announces something, like he's coming.
Yeah.
Like he's showing up.
Yeah, I feel like unique rollouts are like cool, but I honestly, as a listener, I like don't really care. Like I'm happy for just like a basic like single, maybe another single, here's the album.
Here's the album.
Yeah. I feel like maybe when I was more stanny and like really passionate about being a fan, then it would be more important. But like now I've, I don't know,
Well,
lost the passion.
What do you think about rollouts that kind of like, in my view, almost give artists a way to show like other elements of their artistry? So like, say like Tyler, the Creator with Call Me If You Get Lost, he had like similar to Solange, like a number people could call. Mm-hmm. And then it had like a little like message, and those messages ended up being like part of like skits and interludes on the album, or like Beyonce and all her music, just like creative kind of rollouts. Like,
well,
that.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. Like, I feel like if there's like something that comes out of it, like a music video or like, yeah, like, I guess that's like an art thing. I don't know how to describe the phone thing. I feel like that's pretty cool if something comes out of it. And like, I love music video is like an awesome medium to me. I feel like it's like one of the coolest mediums to like do stuff because they're pretty inconsequential and short and sweet. So this, like, I don't know, you could just tell a like fun little story and it can make no sense. And it's totally fine if a music video just exists to like look cool, you know, which I think is also like kind of unique to the medium of a music video. But I still am just like, I don't know, it's just a lot of, seems like a lot of work. And it makes sense if you're like Beyonce, like, you know, a massive artist, like, or like Janelle Monáe did a visual for a whole album, which is really interesting. It's like her and Tessa Mae Thompson and they're like in love and the galaxy and like.
I will be watching that. I didn't know that.
I think it's on YouTube.
Okay, I will check that out.
Yeah, would recommend. But even then, I'm like, it's just, it's a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Like Taylor Swift, like all this, how does, she's doing so much.
Yeah, she does a lot.
Yeah, I have a question for you.
Okay.
So you know people like Taylor Swift, she's like big into like giving weird like Easter eggs and like little clues and her fans like put together all the clues. Like, is that something you indulge in or like, do you think you would enjoy that as a fan if like Frank Ocean, like, I don't know.
I get why people do. Me personally, no. I feel like if anything, I've been more the person that will like look at the answers after someone else has done all the work for me.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think it's like a cool concept, but I feel like I don't like to work for that.
Yeah.
And
it's an interesting concept when people do that. I was watching a video about this and the person was saying how like when people do album rollouts like that, it's like pretty much exclusively for their like hardcore stans to have fun with, which makes sense if you're an artist like Taylor Swift because you're so massive.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you don't need to try to expand or like market yourself.
Yeah.
You can just kind of have fun. Whereas a lot of like traditional album rollouts exist to like spread the word.
Yeah. Because I think of like one of the most recent album rollouts was like the Boy Genius album, and they were literally everywhere. Like, cover story on cover story on cover story.
Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was definitely with the intention of like, we want everybody to know like who Boy Genius is and how like awesome they are versus something like Taylor Swift, who can kind of.
She doesn't need to do anything.
She has the clout for that.
Yeah.
Should I play maybe my song of the week
that
kind of ties into this? So my song of the week is from like Tyler, the Creator's deluxe album that just dropped. I'm really enjoying it. And the song's called Wharf Talk. He has like a really cool music video for it. It's with ASAP Rocky. Mm-hmm. And it really reminded me of like early mid 2000s like music videos where they just have like random scenes of like people dancing and stuff.
It also sounds like an early 2000s song.
Yeah, it very much very gives Pharrell-y. Like Neptunes. Yeah, like Pharrell vibes. So yeah, here is Wharf Talk by Tyler the Creator and ASAP Rocky. Hope you enjoy.
Call me if you get lost.
If God was here with us today, I think I know what he would say. Some shit like, you're so beautiful. Look nice.
Put the one on your face.
I got a new boat you should come with. I got a section for your luggage. Bring some fiction and a nightlight. Record player when you're top five. We'll be going. We should get lost. No more questions. Let the wharf talk. I want you to come get lost with me. One more time before I try to leave. So can you make up your mind? The wave's gonna come, wave's gonna come. So can you make up your mind? The wave's gonna come. Unlike my friends, don't think I'll fall in love again, but I'll take the chance. Seclusion isn't in my plans. Pack my shit up, time I headed back out, cause my shit's up. Spend it all in one out, wanna split some. Some here with you right now. If you got cold feet, it's warm by the water. You can turn your page around. Let me be the author. Don't leave your destiny. Oh, by the harbor.
So can you make up your mind? The wave's gonna come, wave's gonna come. So can you make up your mind? The wave's gonna come.
Them bitches say I'm too conceited. They see the way I treat her. Be my señorita, put a ring up on her finger. Take her out the climate, somewhere to put her feet up. Neck valentine, rubies, diamonds. Billionaire yacht, party climbing was hot. Baby, if you seasick, we can stop and die. Yeah, lobster and calamari, caviar. Lots of luggage, right before the carry on.
I got a new boat, you should come with. I got a section for your luggage. There's an action and a night. We can play, girl. Top time, we going. We should get lost. No more questions. Let the walk talk.
I want you to come get lost with me. Ask you one more time.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM.
Yes, yes, you and I rocking with the best, 101.9 CITR Radio. Crimes and Treasons, this is your boy Just Blaze. Right now you're rocking with Jules Andre Brown, Rolly Rails, Jamal Steels, and Horsepower. You know what it is, right?
Yo, it's Iron Sue, man. I want to shout out Crimes and Treasons Radio, man. CITR 101.9, man. Turn up, turn up, turn up.
Hello, hello, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is Fan Club with Isia and Daniel.
Yo, yo.
And we've been talking about album rollouts.
Yes, this has been such a fun episode. We only have about like 10 minutes left, so maybe we can try and get through all the other ones we wanted to talk about. But one artist I wanted to briefly mention, don't have too much to say other than that I thought it was a cool rollout, was The Weeknd with his After Hours album. Mm-hmm. He essentially like kicked it off with a late night performance, and then like the video of that performance ended up like leading into like a series of like music videos that kind of told like a like quasi narrative kind of thing leading up to the album and even after. And like he was always wearing that red suit everywhere.
Is this for Starboy or whatever?
No, this was After Hours, so the one with like Save Your Tears and
I see. Yeah, I like that song, actually.
Yeah, that was a good one. I just thought that one was cool. And I thought that was like a very well executed, like major label, major artist rollout, because I feel like he capitalized on his hype and like his success so much to the point where the album that came after that didn't do as well because people were still listening to like his, like the one that came before. Kind of thing, which is crazy to me.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, very good problem.
I feel like he's always been good with that kind of thing. Like, even because when he started off, right, he was like really elusive and like mysterious, like the Tumblr days and like House of Balloons or what's that album called, or EP? Like people didn't know what he looked like.
Yeah,
right.
Yes.
That's similar to Pink Panthers as well. Like for a while, no one knew what Pink Panthers looked like. She didn't like show her face.
Yeah,
when she was like first blowing up.
Until she was kind of on TikTok. That verge of like, okay, I need to show my face if I want to
be a pop star.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I feel like is kind of it's an easy and cool way to build intrigue, especially now when there's like social media and
overexposure.
Yeah, and everyone shows too much of themselves spiritually.
Yes.
Potentially.
No, I agree.
It's like we just know too much about everyone, and it's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. Speaking of knowing too much about artists, maybe that's a good segue into our next artist, which is Kanye West. I feel like his album rollouts are very infamous.
Erratic
at this point. Because his rollouts used to be very like clean before. Because if you think of like the Graduation album, it was very much hyped up as like a battle between him and like 50 Cent, who made kind of like harder, more aggressive rap, and Kanye, who made more like soft and sensible rap. And it was like, who was going to win out? And they had like press interviews that kind of paralleled like those like press conferences that like fighters do before like a big fight, which I thought was funny. And then even like My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy with like the tuxedos everywhere, and like Watch the Throne we were talking about earlier. He like played Otis for like 20-30 minutes without actually playing the full song. But then we got to like The Life of Pablo was a bit messier, but still like kind of cool because he had like the fashion show thing, if you remember that, where he like also played the album, and then he like released it after performing it on SNL, like some of it. And I feel like the one influential thing Kanye did, at least with that roulette, was like merch becoming like a big part of like album drops and like an album's success in general. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, isn't it technically, at least for a bit, it was included in streams? Because I remember when they started including YouTube videos as streams because of Gangnam Style. I think that was like the catalyst for the charts including YouTube videos for streams. And then at some point there were like merch counts. Yeah. And then there was a whole like beef
Nicki
between
Minaj
Travis Scott.
Yeah.
She's like, you're getting streams for hoodies, which is kind of fair. I'd be like, bro, what?
Yeah.
Like if you have fans who are like hypebeast boys, then you can get a lot of streams from those hoodies. But yeah, I feel like, that's true. That is a really kind of influential thing that Kanye has done. And he's just like, I feel like I'm going on a tangent, and this is for another day. But I was just thinking about Taylor Swift's merch on her, I don't mean to pin
reputation.
Taylor Swift against Kanye West. But yeah, her latest tour, the merch and everything is so bad.
Oh yeah, it was like fading with like
a wash. Yeah, it's just like not, the design is not. It just seems like no one cared about it, which is wild to me because she seems so like meticulous about everything else she does.
Yeah.
And like I heard that her current tour is like 40 songs and it's like rehearsed down to a T and it's like jam packed.
It's like 3 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the merch is just like
terrible.
Just whatever, which is interesting.
Very
choice.
Interesting.
So I feel like, I mean, obviously people have cared about their merch in the past, but I feel like treating merch like a fashion line was a very Kanye thing.
Yeah.
And he like influenced a lot of people to also do that.
Yeah, I agree. Because even like the last concert I went to, which was SZA, she like partnered with this clothing company called like Online Ceramics for her tour merch,
them. Yeah.
So like her tour merch was like super
really
cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I think Omar Apollo dropped a bunch of merch, but is also just kind of like, you can't tell that hard that it is Omar Apollo merch.
Yeah.
Which, like, I feel like has lasting power because you may not even listen to his music anymore in, like, 5 years, but you may still wear the hoodie because it's, like, a nice hoodie, you know?
Yeah.
Which I think is a really good move, and everyone should do that.
Yes.
Instead of having merch with your face on it. No one wants merch with anyone's face on it.
Nobody wants it. Yeah, I agree. And then, like, continuing with Kanye, I feel like he... Another big thing he did, and I don't know, I maybe it's yet to be seen how influential it is fully, but I've seen like a lot of other artists doing this in like varying like degrees, but like listening parties.
Mm-hmm.
So like his slew of like 2018 albums, and then like Donda, where he had three, and like each listening party, the album was like a little bit different, and like there's a bunch of that one was very that one was a little bit of a messy time. For Kanye, but I felt like the listening parties were pretty influential as well in terms of like how artists hype up their stuff.
I feel like Taylor Swift also does that. She like has like meetups with her fans. She like invites her fans to like her house and like listens to.
Yeah.
It was a thing she was doing for a while. I don't know what they were called. It's kind of weird though.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. The vibe must be so strange because.
The security must be crazy.
The security's crazy and it's just like a bunch of people who are like obsessed with you. Like, I don't know. Must be like a weird.
I wouldn't want those people in my house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I keep on bringing up Taylor Swift. She's very relevant right now.
No, that is totally okay.
She's on the mind.
Speaking of artists who have worked with Jack Antonoff, do we want to talk about Brockhampton quickly and maybe Death Grips?
I mean, all I was going to say about Brockhampton is, whereas I really appreciate someone like Frank Ocean, taking their time, sweet, sweet, sweet time in dropping music, I feel like Brockhampton, and like obviously it was intentional because the album series is literally called Saturation, but like the intense saturation of their albums, it was like, I feel like end of high school, beginning of university, everyone was obsessed with them like so hard, and then everyone just kind of fell out of love with them at the same time.
Yeah.
And stopped caring because there was just like so much going on and too much content and like too much to grab onto, and I feel like that's not sustainable.
The Saturation trilogy period was really fun, though.
No, I was obsessed. 18-year-old me, I was obsessed. yeah, and I feel like we don't have time for much else, which is fine. Okay.
Do you want to speak about Death Grips really quick?
No, it's okay. Yeah, it's fine.
All right.
Story for another day.
Story for another time.
Overall, Daniel, what do you think? I don't know. What, like, makes you excited about an album? Do you think the rollout really cares for your, like, personal involvement or interest? Or if you like the artist, you're just going to be excited no matter what. And if you don't like the artist, there's nothing they can do to, like, spark your interest.
I think it's both. Like, I feel like if it's an artist like Frank Ocean where, like, I mean, I still love Blonde and all his other albums, but it's something that I'm, like, oh, like, I would love another album from him. If he didn't do a rollout and just, like, uploaded his file to, like, Spotify or whatever, then I'd, like, absolutely eat it up. But I also love album rollouts that kind of show the artist, like, knows they have this fan base and all these people that have been waiting, and they kind of, like, play into that, where it's like, here's a little crumb, here's a little, like, yeah. Here's a little piece, and then it's, like, more and more until you get the full thing. So I feel like it's kind of, like, ramping you up into the album. So I kind of like that, but yeah, I don't know. Cool. I guess that's why it's the art of the album.
True. Yeah. I think I feel the same way. But I don't know. Who's my favorite current artist? I really love Alex G, and he is basic AF with his rollouts, and I don't mind one bit.
You don't mind one bit?
No. Okay. Still love him. I think that is all we have this week.
Yeah.
For you all. Any parting thoughts, Daniel?
Thanks for listening to Whoever Listened. Album rollouts are cool to talk about, so thanks for talking about it with me, Isia. And I hope everyone has a great day, and stay tuned, because there's some great content coming up, I'm sure.
Awesome. Okay. Bye.
Bye.